Inside the Closs Podcast.
What'll it be? What'll it be? This is Dee Franklin repping the BK in the NYC. How's it going, everybody? This is Dave Franklin of Inside Lacrosse with the second episode of the 2014 MCLA podcast. Welcome to the show, everybody. We have so many exciting things to talk about. Franklin's 15 minutes of fame. We'll be joined by Grand Valley State head coach Tim Murray. And even some exciting scores to report from this very Wednesday evening. Michigan State, ranked number 9, out in the Rockies to do battle with the best of the RMLC. They lose to number 5, BYU, 6-5 this evening. We'll see how Sparty does later in the week against Colorado and Colorado State. Florida is out in California this week. They lost to Stanford 13-5 and fall tonight to number 11. The Sonoma State Seawolves, 16-8. Pretty decent quality win there for Sonoma State and Pancho Ojeda's boys. And in Division II action, last time I checked the score, Grove City, number 3, ranked on top of number 14, Palm Beach Atlantic. So many crazy things ultimately coming out of the SCLC, especially in Division II. But currently lead 13-12 over Palm Beach Atlantic. What a game this has been. Grove City had a huge lead at halftime, so we'll see if and when this becomes the final. Nick Scalzo scoring the 12th goal for Palm Beach Atlantic at the 1:56 mark of the fourth quarter, so looks like 2 minutes remaining. We'll see if Grove City can hold on to that win. We'll discuss that in the Tim Murray interview. But ultimately, as I was saying, I mean, if Palm Beach Atlantic pulls out this win, what a picture that will ultimately paint. I mean, we've seen crazier things before, I guess. I mean, SCAD made it to the national tournament in 2012 off of the momentum of a win that they had earlier in the season against the defending champion Davenport. But, you know, Tennessee Wesleyan currently ranked number 21. They had beaten two Division I teams and, of course, battled SCAD. They lost to St. Andrews, who's, of course, a varsity-funded program who matriculates in from NCAA Division II. I mean, Grove City lost to number 15, Florida Gulf Coast, over on Monday. So, I mean, you know, Dunk City obviously is investing in more than just basketball. But a really exciting win. But again, it just makes the picture that much more fuzzy in SCLC. That southern region, you have SCAD, you have Florida Gulf Coast, you have Palm Beach Atlantic. You know that Elon's going to perform well. Obviously, Tennessee Wesleyan is, you know, making their mark. You can't really sleep on Kennesaw State either. I mean, this is a conference that just lost Liberty. So unbelievable things to look forward to this season out of this conference, especially because the Lone Star Alliance does not have that automatic bid. And then before we get into Franklin's 15 minutes of fame, just some recaps of the weekend. The Cal Bears beat the San Diego Toreros 12-11. Perhaps the team from the University of San Diego really kind of starting to catch their stride in Division I. Michigan State's in town this weekend. Last week it was Texas. Texas lost, the Longhorns did, to Colorado 18-10. And then an incredible game on Sunday following that loss to Colorado on Friday. Colorado State, currently ranked number 1, does get the better of Texas 4-3. Unbelievable goaltending performances in that low-scoring affair. Jack Regan and Colton Fatsinger for Colorado State in that two-goalie system. And, of course, Jordan Lee from Texas, very talented athlete. Chapman beat Grand Canyon 9-8. Chapman beat Grand Canyon by a goal last year. But you can never count Manny Rapkin's boys out. Even without their best and starting attackman, Carson Barton, they have shown to be competitive and earn their high ranking in MCLA Division I. But you can never sleep on Manny. Grand Canyon taking down a very hot UCSB team in conference, 9-7. UCSB was, of course, off to a great start, having beaten Stanford to start the year. But Grand Canyon, the Lopes, one player goes down, move someone else up in the depth chart. evolve and adapt and continue to win. Unbelievable. Florida State, Central Florida. This was one that we were looking forward to for a while. A lot of injuries in this game. Jason Center, we reported last week that the trainers were optimistic that it was just a knee sprain, but an MCL confirms he has torn his ACL. He's out for the year. He won't be able to play for the Israeli national team this summer in Denver. Jason was my roommate, actually, in 2012 in both Israel and Amsterdam. And, obviously he's a good friend of mine. And, he was the senior captain at Florida State and did a lot of things to make some really positive changes for that program. And, I'm very sorry for Jason and wish him the best. But they pull out the win over Central Florida. They also were ridden with injuries. Most notably to their attackman, starting attackman who transferred from Division I Mercer, has broken wrists. So James Foote's boys just fall a little bit short against the Seminoles, but what a game of warriors that was. George Washington really beat down in Southern Connecticut State 18-4. We'll talk about that a little bit later. North Dakota State picked up two wins on Friday night against Lindenwood, Bellevue, and St. Olaf. We'll talk about a very special performer in that game. And then, of course, there was the game that North Dakota State played against Grand Valley State and the games that took place between the Lakers and St. Thomas. Grand Valley and St. Thomas met in the 2012 National Championship game in Greenville, and we'll talk to Coach Murray a little bit more about that in a bit. On Saturday, UConn took down Coast Guard 10-9. Coast Guard, of course, is preparing to make that jump to NCAA Division III. This surprised me. I thought Coast Guard was going to win. UConn, obviously a ranked team in Division I and out of a very hot conference, the way that Boston College and Northeastern are playing. I thought that Coast Guard would win this game, but what a great way to start off the season in the heart of lacrosse hotbed in Connecticut. Of course, these rankings are reported as of Tuesday, but Simon Fraser, currently ranked number 12, beat a currently ranked 16 Oregon team 15-5. Oregon, of course, going through a coaching change, and Simon Fraser just has so much talent, and I think we'll be seeing Brent Hoskins in Southern California. The Deep South's oldest rivalry, I don't think that UGA or Auburn will compete for an SELC title this year, but Georgia, who, of course, made it to the dance last year, picks up the 10-goal win over the Tigers in that game. Michigan State, again, they lost tonight against BYU, but nice little Big Ten win, 16-5 over Indiana. Of course, that's a CCLA-GRLC clash. But Michigan State gets the win there. And before our previews of next week and talking to Coach Murray, let's jump into 15 Minutes of Fame. 15 Minutes of Fame. 15 Minutes of Fame. Terry's right. We should get a soundbite for this. 15 Minutes of Fame. All right. Let's start off with Division I Player of the Week. George Washington, they're a second-year program in the MCLA. We're Division II runners-up in the NCLL Club League in 2012. But ultimately, Charlie Fertini, an ROTC guy, who is a captain this season, had 9 goals and an assist against Southern Connecticut and had 4 goals against Coastal Carolina. So this is, again, an ROTC kid, very coachable. And he leads the MCLA in goals per game with 5.25. Charlie Fertini, 15 Minutes of Fame. We'll keep things in the Southeastern Lacrosse Conference for a change on my podcast. Liberty beat Kentucky and Tennessee by a combined score of 35-12. They have double digits in every game, and they've held their opponents to single digits in every game. So Kyle McQuillan, I think, is just doing everything that he can to, show that his team deserves to be ranked, even as a newcomer to MCLA Division I. Westminster is getting love, and they deserve love with their pole spot, but I just don't understand what's keeping Liberty out at this juncture. I will be in Lynchburg, Virginia, for the regionally televised broadcast of their midnight blackout game against North Carolina State, and I look forward to that and meeting up with Kyle. But Kyle McQuillan, 15 Minutes of Fame for you and the Flames. Moving on to Division II, in that big Midwestern clash, Dane Senn, unbelievable, had a huge night in that doubleheader against St. Olaf and Lindenwood Bellevue, and played against Grand Valley State as well. Dane Sen, Franklin's 15 minutes of fame. What was that, 16 points in the opening weekend? 13 in the doubleheader, and then adding the other three against a very good Grand Valley State team. Dane Sen's going to have to do some heavy lifting. Peter Flock from North Dakota State, their star attackman, is going to actually be taking time away to ROTC-oriented things. He's pursuing Navy SEAL school, so lacrosse just is not on his priority list right now, and we wish Coach Flock, we wish Peter the best in his ventures, and look forward to seeing how Coach Bosch's squad will compete in the things that Dane Sen will continue to do. Redshirt freshman, what a weekend. And then finally, we talked about Florida Gulf's Coast win over Grove City. And for that, Mike Double D from Dunk City, the Florida Gulf Coast Eagles, 15 minutes of fame. 15 minutes of fame. Charlie Fertini out of George Washington, Kyle McQuillan out of Liberty, Dane Sen out of North Dakota State, and Mike Double D, Florida Gulf Coast, 15 minutes of fame. 15 minutes of fame. Okay, everybody, we will move the podcast along in just a moment when we are joined with Grand Valley State head coach Tim Murray. And the Inside Lacrosse podcast continues with Tim Murray, the head coach of Grand Valley State. So many exciting things to talk about with Coach Murray. Coach, thanks for joining us once again on the podcast. I guess you're a bit of a veteran. You joined us live in Greenville in 2012, and we're happy to have you back.
Yeah, thank you. Glad to be back. Glad to be part of the program.
Tim, you let's get right to it. Let's cut to the chase. I mean, you just flew in from Minnesota, and boy, are your arms tired. I mean, you have a rematch against St. Thomas. I mean, this is a team that you played in the national championship in 2012. But let's start off with the game that you played against St. John's to start off the year. I mean, you said some nice things about Derek Dane earlier in the week. You know, what do you think, you know, makes him such a good coach, and what do you really take away from that first game on Friday?
Well, you know, Derek does a great job of playing to his team's strengths. I think he understands the personality of his team very well. And he really does a great job of adjusting to what you're trying to do defensively and really put his players in a position to be successful. You know, when you prepare for a team like St. John's, it can be difficult because they don't really run a lot of set plays per se. They have some tendencies, they have some offensive sets that they're in, but they really, you know, they really have a kind of a freelance quality about the way they approach the offensive end. And it makes it really difficult just because you can't really, it's difficult to game plan against. You end up game planning against tendencies more than anything else. But that's really all you can do. We knew going into the game, I mean, they pretty much had the entire offensive end of the field from last year returning, including Helmer, their attackman, who's just a fantastic player. So we knew that we were going to have our hands full offensively. You know, St. John's has kind of made their reputation in years past of just being a fierce defensive team. You know, they still have that ferocity on the defensive end. But they've really, I feel like they're more explosive offensively this year than they have been in years past.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I mean, you know, we know so much about Helmer. We see him year in and year out. 7 points in this game. I mean, how did he get that done? I mean, you have one of the most blue collar defenses I've ever seen. I mean, he really had a day against you guys.
He did. You know, he can create opportunities for himself. He's a very dynamic offensive player. But he also, you know, he sees the field well. He understands what defenses are doing to him, and he knows how to take advantage and exploit that. You know, he had a couple good looks on man up, but he's a great player. You know, we slid early to him. We would fake slide to him. He has a great understanding of what's going on, and you know, as his trademark of a well-coached team. He never really panics. You know, he's kind of calm, cool, collected, and you know, it's difficult to force him into mistakes. It's tough to really eliminate him from the game plan. You know, their coaching staff has been around the block enough where they know how to take advantage of matchups, you know, whether it's bringing them in through the midline or you know, whatever the case may be. Like I said, they put their players in a situation to be successful, and they know all the tricks of the trade to do so.
Absolutely. So moving on deeper into your weekend, you suffered the 12-8 loss to St. Thomas. I mean, you know, I almost want to take things back a bit. I mean, this you're starting the season against, you know, two of the top teams in the country. Your second game of the year, you're going in 0-1, you know, and have to face a team that has won two consecutive MCLA championships, one of which was against you. I mean, how do you emotionally keep your team focused over the course of a weekend like this and into and through the St. Thomas game?
Yeah. You know, one of the nice things with playing St. John's and St. Thomas and then North Dakota State on three consecutive days is I didn't have a concern of us taking a day off or looking ahead to an opponent. You know, if you have to fabricate a reason to get motivated to play St. Thomas, then you're doing something wrong. You know, they're an excellent program. Again, they're well coached. They're athletic. They're talented. They're smart. You know, they're a great team, and we knew that we would have to play our absolute best to have a chance at winning that ball game. And you know, I'm really proud of. We have a very young team, and I'm proud of the way they responded. I'm proud of the way that they handled playing three games in succession against a very very strong opponents. You know, we had a lot of unfamiliar barriers that we were trying to overcome, and you know, I'm proud of my team because we never stopped fighting. I honestly feel like we were always in that game. You know, a couple things happen, and you know, maybe we're able to you know, have an opportunity to win at the end, but it didn't, and we're okay with that because it definitely set the standard for which, you know, we know going forward exactly what we need to improve on, you know, what our relative strengths are, what our weaknesses are, and what we need to do to get to a level that we want to be at when the tournament comes around in May.
I mean, this seemed like a really fantastic game. You had the 3-1 lead after the first quarter, and, you know, they bury six in the second. And, you know, you look at, you know, the St. Thomas's contributors, it just seems like all the usual suspects. And, I mean, you and I both know that St. Thomas just gets younger and stronger. But, I mean, you know, Palermo was steady at the X and scored two goals. Shubloom had a good day, six assists, very unselfish. Matt Clevin getting three goals. I mean, you're probably going to see St. Thomas again. I mean, how do you prepare for so much talent?
Well, you know, it's difficult. They're one of those teams that I don't think schematically they're overwhelming. I mean, they're difficult. They definitely provide some difficult schemes to go up against. But the root of the problem against St. Thomas is just the amount of talent that they throw out on the field. You know, I mean, you look at the lineup, you know, they were without one of their All-American midfielders, and going into the game as a coaching staff, we were looking at it like, you know, who do we take away? You know, where's our point of emphasis defensively? You know, there are certain players that you want to make distributors instead of scorers and vice versa. But there's just so much to take in and so much to comprehend. You know, it really makes it difficult. You know, I mean, they're a great team. They really are. And that's, you know, one of the things that we talked about going in the game is when you look at St. Thomas, again, that's a team that just, they don't panic. They take everything in stride. And you look at games, you know, games in the past. I mean, for example, our national championship game, you know, we had a 3 or 4 goal lead early on them, and you know, they just keep digging and climb their way back into the game and obviously eventually won that one. Even last year, you know, they were facing a little bit of adversity with Liberty, who was able to come back and make that a game, but they don't panic. You know, they won that game in overtime. You know, against Westminster, they never seem to panic. And again, I think that's an attribute to the leadership of the team. But we knew going into that game that there were great players. We talked about, hey, they got a lot of talent. They got some great players. They're gonna make a run. We just talked about trying to limit that run and just kind of build upon that. They hit that run the second quarter, and I guess the one thing from our perspective that we can take is outside of a 6 or 7 minute span, we played them pretty much evenly. We just have that inconsistency, and I think that's a hallmark characteristic of young teams, which we clearly are this year. But give credit to St. Thomas. They typical St. Thomas fashion, they just continue to make plays. All the plays that are needed to win, whether it's a defensive stop, whether it's a big face-off, a big save, a big offensive possession, they're able to come up with whatever play is needed for whatever situation. They're a great team, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think the road to the 2014 D2 National Championship, I think you're going to have to go through St. Thomas.
No question about it. I'll take advantage of your insider perspective. You mentioned that they were down an All-American midfielder. I look at the box score. Did Will Hurstman play and go down early in this game? I know that he's been battling some stuff. What was the situation there?
I know that he had a previous injury, and I think, quite frankly, I think it was one of those things where they said, it's March 1st. We're not going to rush him back at this point. Again, that's 100% of me speculating, but that's what I would have done in that situation. But he did not play, and I think that's just another dimension that they're going to add as the season goes on. He gets healthier, and I think that's going to make St. Thomas even stronger than they are right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't even think that you could count that as speculation. We know that, as deep as St. Thomas is and with the caliber of a person and coach that Pete Moosbrugger is, Will Hurstman was battling a lot. He had Lyme's disease last year and, was just having wear and tear of not having, his body in full shape through, what is usually healthy football and lacrosse seasons for him. And I believe he had an ankle or an Achilles injury, but was expected to be back, full and 100% to start off the season. But, weather affects these things, and we're all dealing with a lot of colds. And, March 1st, when you have a player like John Michael Kuhn who could run the transition game, almost in isolation with the help of some of his guys. I mean, yeah, you're unfortunately, Tim, you're going to probably have to prepare for Hurstman a little bit later. But let's move on to, before we talk about your game with North Dakota State, we've obviously talked about the caliber of coaches that Pete and Derek are, and we know that Zach Bosch is a first-class guy as well. And you and I talk a lot off the record, and we talk about people of very high caliber who are involved in this sport and how many of them honorably filter in to the MCLA. Tell me a little bit more about a moment that you had with Moose and Derek and Zach. And kind of some of the things that unfolded. You gave me some pretty big updates about your goalie Danny Kranzberger and how that kind of relates to Peter Flack. And coming off of news that a player from Palm Beach Atlantic wants to travel and skydive, and go and players from Oregon State and Arizona State having some academic issues. Tell me a little bit. Share it with our audience. What you disclosed to me a little bit earlier in the week.
Yeah, I had the opportunity on Saturday. With the other coaches, with Derek, Pete, and Zach, we were able to meet up for lunch on Saturday, and it's really great. One of the things, like you said, one of the things that you and I have talked about before are just the quality of people and the high character people that we interact with in the sport. And going out to lunch with them and just kind of being able to talk shop and. I don't think we talked X's and O's once. Just kind of catching up on life, seeing how everyone was doing, and just kind of sharing stories, and it was great. It was truly enjoyable for me, and I'm confident the other guys enjoyed it as well. But we were just talking, Danny Kranzberger, who was a first team All-American for us last season, has gotten an offer and is going to Grand Valley now on a full ride through the ROTC program. And that's a tremendous opportunity for him. That's what he wants to do moving forward in his life and his career. And so, Danny and I had some conversations, and he decided, and I fully support his decision, that, he didn't feel right with the ROTC's commitment to him, to not commit fully to their program as well. And so he decided that he wasn't gonna be able to put in the time, wasn't be able to commit himself to the team, and decided that that wouldn't be fair to the team or the ROTC program if he was trying to kind of split. So he decided not to play lacrosse this year, and I'm proud of him for the decision that he made. I thought it was a very mature decision. Does it hurt us going forward? There's obviously there are shoes that we need to fill now. We're working hard to do that. We have three freshman goalies, and they've been competing all throughout the off season. They're continuing to compete and better themselves now. That's such is life at the MCLA level. There's no financial commitment for athletics, obviously, and we understand that. When you come to Grand Valley to play lacrosse, you're not just coming to Grand Valley to play lacrosse. You're coming to Grand Valley to prepare yourself for your career after school. And Danny has the opportunity to do that. And like I said, we support that. We've had players in the past, that had engineering internships and just weren't going to have the time to commit themselves to the lacrosse program. And we understand that. I'm not mad at him or anything like that. We'll move forward. And Coach Bosch, I don't think I'm revealing any breaking news. But with his attack and Peter Flock, who is an All-American caliber attackman, very dynamic playmaker, he is has joined or is joining the Navy SEAL school. So we spent the last year preparing for that, and it's very similar situation to Kranzberger. He wasn't able to play this year because he's going to go off to the Navy SEAL school. And obviously, it's difficult to fault someone to take advantage of an opportunity like that. If that's what they want to do, that's where they see their life and their career headed. I would almost fault them for not taking advantage of that. Does it hurt? Does Flock's absence, hurt NDSU? I have the same situation. They have some big shoes to fill. They had some great offensive pieces against us. We feel fortunate to be able to come away with a win against them. I hate to think about the obstacles we would have had to overcome had Flock been there. It's just one of those things where, and as a coach, I think you're always thinking about what's best for these kids. Do we want to win in lacrosse? Do we want to be successful? Yes. But I think lacrosse is a vehicle by which we're teaching lifelong skills. And one of those skills being, a commitment to yourself and your future. These kids, they have the opportunity to take advantage of what they want to do. And, I'm proud of them. And I think it's very commendable that they do so.
I couldn't agree more. And again, this is very refreshing news. We've heard, and the funny thing is, we hear our fair share of stories about those that are unable to, commit to lacrosse or even, be in school for a given semester due to not so fortunate circumstance. And Tim, for every story that we hear, there's probably 12 that we don't. It's always nice and refreshing to hear these stories. We always do a bit of an academic focus in the MCLA, and as you said, there aren't many schools in this league that offer financial support for lacrosse, and even in places where it does, sometimes other things take priority. And for the few schools that do offer financial assistance and are able to help, the caliber of person that Jake Arthur is out of a Westminster program that is, of course, headed by Mace Goodhands. I mean, the things that he was able to do last year balancing lacrosse as he prepares to go to Armed Services Med School,
was spectacular. And his unique situation is fantastic in that regard. But in other cases, with other programs, sometimes it's hard to make it work. And, more often than not, it seems to be, in stories like this from, in stories about Peter from Zach's program, even seeing, a guy like Will Hurstman see limited playing time considering his history. I think that it just speaks to the level of leadership that they're receiving. So let's just quickly talk about the North Dakota State game. You got a win against them last year when you really kind of needed it most. It was a very close game this year. Obviously, it's a physical battle. What's your quick takeaway from that from your 2014 battle with the Bison?
Well, last year's game, again with Danny Kranzberg and that, he had something like an 80 or 81% save percentage that game. I've known Danny for a while. I've known his family, watched him play in high school. Actually, coached against him in high school, and I've known him for years. I've seen him play for years, and I honestly think that his level of play when we played North Dakota State last year, that was the best I've ever seen him play. The score, if you just look at the score, you see that, we won 12-4, I think it was. And you think, wow, they kind of dominated that game, controlled throughout. That was not the case. Danny Kranzberger stood on his head against North Dakota State last year, and that's what really created the difference in that game. We knew, going into this year's game, we were expecting a battle just like it was last year. We definitely got that. North Dakota State didn't disappoint. They're one of those teams. They're sneaky athletic. They got a lot of good athletes, and just the tough mentality that they have. They're going to guard you from the moment you get off the bus. They pressure you all over the field, and it really it puts your players in a position where, you got to make sure that you're calm, not panicking, because their style of play can really force a lot of turnovers and really, really create a lot of unfortunate situations. Fortunate for them, unfortunate for the team that they're playing. Zach does a great job. Coach Bosch does a great job with their team, and they got a lot of really nice players. I think that conference, the UMLC. From a Division II standpoint, that's going to be a very exciting conference to see how that unfolds. I think
They don't even have an automatic bid.
right, exactly, and I think there's going to be a lot of desperation, for lack of a better term, when these teams meet each other. Not only are they talented, they're well coached. I mean, you go down the list, I can throw out a list of adjectives to describe one of these three teams, and you'd have a difficult time guessing
out
which
who you're
team I'm
talking about.
talking about, because they're all very similar in their approach to the game and just their mentality with the game. But with as familiar as they are with one another, and as talented as they are, and as well coached as they are, I really think that conference down the stretch is going to be one heck of a conference to watch and just see how everything unfolds.
Absolutely. I still think it's a three-team, bid league. I think you see all those guys in Orange County, California. Obviously, there have been questions about, the borders in the MCLA, and that's a debate that will continue to take place away from my desk. But let's get in to some of your personnel for this year. One of the things that I really like about your program is it's always nice to see. You look down the roster and see two guys that share the same last name, and it's not a coincidence. You got Charlie Farmer, who was a brother of Tyler, who was a real star for you on offense. You got Charlie as a transfer at a Division I program, High Point. His brother has graduated, but he comes in, as an underclassman, but certainly in a leadership role. I mean, last year you had a team with a decent amount of senior leadership and not so much depth. The theme has kind of reversed itself a bit. And the biggest question I have about Charlie is I so much enjoyed watching him play with a long pole and a short stick last year. Obviously, when you get more depth, you don't want to be extending players like that. But how, you know, you have other great LSMs, but, you know, how has his game changed? How has his role changed? And who is going to be, you know, compensating for the LSM work that he did last year?
Well, you know, the first thing that I'm the most proud of with Charlie is, you know, he's really stepped forward as a vocal leader on this team. I think last year, I think he was in a little bit, I don't want to say awkward, but it was an unusual situation where I don't know if you know, I think he kind of deferred leadership, obviously, to his brother, Tyler, and a couple of the other seniors that we had. But this year, you know, we only have two seniors on our roster. One's a fifth-year senior. And so we really need some of those younger players to really step forward and fill those leadership roles. And that's the one thing that Charlie's done so far. You know, he's really established himself as one of the vocal leaders, and you know, he's that standard setter for us. You know, he's the first one to practice. He's the hardest worker practice, and you know, we have a roster of 26 freshmen. You know, 31 of our 39 players on the roster are either freshmen or sophomores. So they're really kind of looking for someone to set that standard and be that role model and that leader by example. And Chu is really, really filling that role well for us. You know, on the field, he's just such a great talent. You know, he can obviously play offense. He can play defense. He can face off. You know, he'd probably be one of our best long poles if we need him to. You know, he'd even fill up the water bottles probably better than anyone else. He's talented. He's competitive. He has that drive. You know, he has that hatred of losing. You know, he just, no matter what it is, he's going to do whatever he can, to find a way to win. You know, fortunately, like you said, you know, we have a little bit more depth this year. You know, we're hoping that we don't need him to play any long pole. We have, you know, a good crop of freshmen. We're starting two freshmen at close defense and another sophomore. You know, our top two LSMs are both freshmen. You know, so we're very young, but we're extremely talented. You know, so it's one of those things where it's exciting for me as a coach, because I honestly feel that we're in a position where we can be, you know, continuing to build and continuing to improve. You know, we should be playing our best lacrosse come May. You know, and that's obviously, it goes without saying, that's when you want to be playing your best lacrosse. But you know, it's nice to have that depth, not only for when you have to play consecutive days like you do in, you know, the CCLA tournament and the MCLA tournament, but just for practice sake, to be able to run full field and do a lot of situational stuff that we just didn't have the depth to do last year. You know, that really opens up a lot of possibilities. And I think, honestly, that showed in our first weekend of games. I thought we were much more competent. I thought we were much more confident in our full field transition, you know, getting up and down the field. And I think that's kind of a testament to just being able to do that in practice more frequently. You know, we just weren't able to do that last year.
And you could, you know, look at the glass half full picture all you want in regards to being young and talented. But be honest, you told me in the preseason you were afraid that you were going to lose the rest of your hair with all these young guys.
Yeah, you know, I don't have much hair left, but I was afraid I was going to lose, you know, lose it by the handful. And you know, there've been a fair share of teachable moments. That's for sure. But you know, the younger kids, you know, credit to them. They've absorbed what we're trying to teach. They've bought into the systems. They've bought into the belief of our program. You know, all the standards and all the qualities that we hold dear to the program. They've accepted that. And you know, this is my fourth year at Grand Valley, and I feel like we've had some very special teams at Grand Valley already. I honestly feel like the chemistry and the camaraderie on this team has already surpassed what we've had in years past. I honestly get the feeling that these kids love playing with each other, love playing for each other. You know, they hold each other accountable. You know, it's nice to see, but like you said, you know, there are some difficulties with such a young roster. You just don't have that experience to draw upon. And that's part of the reason we wanted to go out to Minnesota this past weekend. We felt that we needed experience against some elite teams. We felt that in the long run, that would be what's best for our team. And so that's what we went after. And, we competed. We were inconsistent, which I don't think is uncommon with young teams. So it's just a way of making sure that we're making sound decisions throughout the course of the game. We just can't take that mental 5 or 6 minute break, against a great team like St. John's, St. Thomas, or NDSU. That brief, time period of mental lapse, that's the difference in the game, or it can be. So it's, that's one of the things that we're struggling with right now. But, again, we have time. They're not, CCLA tournament isn't starting tomorrow. So, something that we'll work at. And, no team's perfect. Every team has weaknesses. And, we recognize that's one of ours, and we're willing to work for it.
Would expect nothing less. And, you mentioned one of the fifth-year seniors that you have, Jake Seiler. I mean, this is a kid that kind of went through a lot last year. I mean, let's face it, if you really needed anything last season, I mean, that was holding you back, especially early on, you needed a face-off, man. Tell us about the Seiler brothers and how, their connection, ties in with the Farmers, and how you really kind of keep that family atmosphere active at Grand Valley.
Yeah, it's Jake Seiler is one of those kids. Whether you love Grand Valley or hate Grand Valley, you'd have a difficult time not rooting for him. He's extremely hard worker. He was a long pole for us. Started almost every game as a freshman, sophomore, and junior. And he plays for a semi-pro box team in West Michigan. And he ended up tearing his ACL in one of their games, and just wasn't able to get back last year. Had to sit out on the sidelines last year. Was going through that, missed all fall ball, and his family had an unfortunate house fire, and he just kind of, it was one of those when it rains it pours types of situations. You just couldn't get a break, but he got through it. He persevered, and he trained hard to get back. And he recognized that we had an area of need that he could fulfill. And so instead of playing long pole this year, he's facing off for us. And he gives us another dimension at the face off X that we've never had before. He is a former martial arts champion. He's a great athlete. He understands, balance and explosiveness, and all the other attributes that you look for in a face-off middie. He's a great athlete, and we're thrilled that he's back. But it's great for me as a coach to have him back because he makes us a better team. But the one thing that makes me happier more so than anything else is I see how much he loves the game, and I think it was difficult for him last year being around the team and not being an active part during the games. You could see that kind of hurt him. The opportunity for him to get back this year, it's a great story, and it's something, like I said, whether you're a casual fan or a Grand Valley follower or a Grand Valley hater, I don't think you can really look at the Jake Seiler story over the last 2 years and not feel great for him that he was able to find a way back and that he's found success again. And his younger brother, Joey, I feel like seeing Jake go through what he went through last year and, what he went through and what his family went through, I think, the silver lining in everything that they went through was, I think it really drew their family closer together. As a result of that, Joey made the decision to come to Grand Valley. We're thrilled to have him. He's another great athlete. He started at long or close D for us every game this weekend. scored a goal against St. John's in transition. You know, he reads the field well. He's physical. He has that he has that fierce kind of edge to him when he's playing. You know, the stuff that you can't really teach. He just has that. You know, I hesitate to say a mean streak, but I don't know how else to put it. He just, you know, again, he competes and you know, he has a little bit of an attitude about himself when he's on the field. And what's funny about it is off the field, you know, he's a gentleman. He's a great kid. He's you know, he gets the big picture. His academics are the number one priority. It's, you know, a large reason of why he came to Grand Valley is, you know, the academic side of it, along with just the community and the family support that coming to a school like Grand Valley offers him. You know, and we're thrilled. He's a great player, and you know, we're looking forward to the next 4 years of watching him grow and watching him develop both on and off the field.
No question. And I guess, you know, just a quick X's and O's question in that regard. In regards to having Seiler face off with a short pole, is that a tactical decision because you want that on the wing, or is that just what he's more comfortable with, you know, with the box background?
Well, he faced off when he played for his boxing. He was one of their face-off guys. So it's not something that he's unfamiliar with. And again, you know, we've always, and I don't know why, we've just always kind of had that smaller, quicker, you know, type of face-off midfielder. We never really had that overwhelming physical presence. And Jake offers that with us. You know, he's a great technician facing off, but you know, there's no substitute for just strength and size, and he brings that to the face-off X for us. You know, that was a position that we need to improve upon for this year. There's no question about it. And we have Steve Pratt, who's our assistant coach, does a wonderful job coaching our face-off midfielders, and you know, Jake's gotten better and better. We had to tweak a couple things with his technique, but you know, he's just the quintessential leader for us. You know, he understood that that filling that role would equate to a more successful season for the team, and we didn't have to ask him twice. You know, he accepted the role. He's you know, he's done a great job with it. You know, and again, it's another example that I firmly believe that he's going to continue to improve as the season goes on. You know, I think he'll be at his best come May.
Absolutely. Tim, I appreciate your time. I like what you've done with the roster. Charlie Farmer rocking that Gilbert Arenas number 0, Joey and Jake 4 and 5. That's what is that? Pooba's number 4. Connor Schwalm taking over Jack Dooms' number at the one spot. I can't believe you're letting a freshman wear number 77. I can't believe. I mean, I guess what you yeah, how what did he pay you? I don't know. How did that
Yeah,
happen?
he talked me into it. You know, Neil's he's a character. He's a great kid. You know, he's another one of the kids that I've had the fortune of coaching and watching him play throughout high school. And you know, he had his reasons. He wanted 7, and 7 was taken by an upperclassman, and so he jumped on 77. And in a moment of weakness, I agreed to it, and can't turn back after that.
Good for you. Good. Hey, as the guy who wears number 97, I thank you for Neil. Good for you.
Yeah, sorry.
Tim, I appreciate your time. I appreciate your insight. 40 very entertaining minutes. Terry's going to kill me. Thank you so much for coming back on the program. We look forward to seeing more out of your Lakers down the road. Northwood and Central Michigan coming up. A nice little battle with a varsity-funded Missouri Baptist program, and then of course to end the season, you know, rivalry games with Davenport and Indiana Tech should be a really special year.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you again to Grand Valley State head coach Tim Murray for his time and his perspective. A very, very enlightening and entertaining 40 minutes. I'm telling you, I could talk to that guy all day, folks. I kid you not. We continued on the line for 20 minutes talking some football after that. Great guy who really associates himself with the best, Tim Murray from Grand Valley State. Thanks so much, and best of luck to you and your Lakers down the way.
And finally, to wrap up the podcast, a preview of what's to come this weekend. Of course, we told you about Michigan State losing this evening to BYU 6-5. Let's get a quick update of that Grove City score. I mean, let's take advantage of being live, so to speak, here. Grove City taking on Palm Beach Atlantic tonight, pulling out the 15-12 final win. Dave Hall with a much-needed goal with 25 seconds left to seal the victory. So maybe the picture will stay a little bit more clear in the SCLC. But Michigan State stays in town to play Colorado and Colorado State. BYU also having a big weekend, taking on their foes in the Buffaloes and the Rams. And, you know, BYU is going to probably have to play one to two of those teams twice, if not once, at least once more, if not twice more, between the conference and national tournament. Texas has a big weekend. They're playing a game against NCAA Division I Mercer, and then we'll also play Georgia Tech. Chapman is playing against Sonoma, who beat Florida tonight. Chapman will also play Oregon State. And Virginia Tech travels out to California, where they will play Cal Poly and UC Santa Barbara. Division II, a game between Missouri Baptist and North Dakota State. North Dakota State coming off the loss to Grand Valley. Missouri Baptist, I mean, the GRLC more or less wide open in Division II. This is an NAIA varsity-funded team. Andy Jolly, a pretty good coach, looking to get the Spartans going. And again, Coast Guard comes in to the Southeast region to play Palm Beach Atlantic. Again, fresh off that loss to Grove City, and will play St. Andrews, who had that big win over Tennessee Wesleyan. That will wrap up the second episode of the 2014 season on this Inside Lacrosse MCLA podcast. Thanks again to Tim Murray for our executive producer, Terry Foy, my pit bull Winston, my golden retriever Jordan, and anybody else who's hanging out in my apartment right now. This is David Franklin signing off.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.